You are now listening to the Legends Lingo Podcast, presented by Student Union Sports. Here are your hosts, Al and Powder. Enjoy the show.
All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Legends Lingo Podcast, episode 198, presented by StudentUnionSports.com. Make sure to check out everything on Student Union, from the daily blogs to the podcast and everything else in between. The Is It Saturday Yet podcast, which features the latest and greatest in college football news, betting tips, and everything else that you can imagine, as well as the Not Gonna Lie podcast, which is our NFL podcast on the network. Talks about everything NFL related, news, analysis, highlights, as well as betting tips and everything else that you can imagine. Alan Hegan here tonight. No Tom Powder Cadmus, as Powder had something come up, and that's okay. It's the holidays. Thanksgiving's in a couple days. I'm recording this on Tuesday, November 22nd, so 2 days before Thanksgiving. So if you're listening to this, happy Thanksgiving, or happy Thanksgiving Eve whenever this comes out, or happy Black Friday if you celebrate Black Friday with Black Friday shopping and everything else in between. A lot to talk about tonight. Patriots coming off a very, it's hard to say impressive, but a very fun and thrilling win over the Jets in Foxborough. Going to touch on everything tonight. Going to touch on the Red Sox a little bit. Going to touch on the Bruins for a second. Going to touch on the Celtics. Going to touch on everything in between. So the first thing that I want to bring up is obviously the Patriots. We got to talk about it. So Patriots in week 11 take home a 10-3 win over the New York Jets. Things look pretty bleak, not going to lie. The offense had 2 weeks to really prepare for this game against the Jets. Now, granted, the Jets have a great front seven. They have a great defensive line. Obviously, it showed. They sacked Mac Jones 6 times on Sunday in the game. But the thing is, I'm sorry, people are going to be hearing me cough. I've been battling a cough. Hopefully, we'll be done with this soon, so please bear with me. But the Jets came into this game, simple game plan, shut down the Patriots' offense. They did that. The defense for the Patriots, same thing, shut down the Jets' offense, shut down Zach Wilson. Zach Wilson doesn't play well against the Patriots. Proved it again on Sunday. So there's a couple things with this game that we have to discuss. First of all, Marcus Jones, what a return in clutch time. Less than 30 seconds left. Marcus Jones, 84 yards to the house on a punt return, and returns it with 5 seconds left in the game to give the Patriots their only touchdown of the day, the only touchdown scored by either team on the day, for the 10-3 victory. And that's a credit to Bill Belichick finding a diamond in the rough in Marcus Jones. And you know, Marcus Jones, he's done this before. He was at, I believe, is the University of Houston. 9 punt return touchdowns and kickoff return touchdowns in his career at Houston. 9. I was actually watching the other day. He had a winning punt return against SMU. I believe it was last year. So this Marcus Jones kid is legit, especially in the special teams game. So that's big. Patriots defense, once again, holding the Jets to 3 points. Really, really good day. And if it wasn't for a Zach Wilson prayer that he threw downfield and somehow completed, because the way the wind was on Sunday, it was moving the ball everywhere, and it just happened to find a Jets receiver hands and set up the only field goal for the game, Patriots could have shut down the Jets. They could have shut them out, plain and simple. Zach Wilson on the day, 9 for 22, 77 yards. I mean, that's a testament to the Patriots defense. They gave up minus 21 passing yards in the second half. Patriots gave up negative passing yards. They shut down the Jets in the second half. Incredible to see. But back to the offense for a second. The offense only scored 3 points too, and that's not good. Now, people are going to try to say, could be on Mac Jones. I want you to think about something here. Mac Jones went 23 for 27 in the game, 246 yards. He got sacked 6 times. But I don't know if Patriots fans were watching closely on Sunday, but there was a graphic up on the CBS Sports channel. And Mac Jones had completed 10 passes in a row, a couple of them for over 20 yards, like 20 yards or more. And then not only that, in between those 10 completions at the time, he was sacked 4 times. When are we going to get it through our heads that Mac Jones is not the complete problem here? Now, has Mac Jones had his moments where he's been bad his second year in the NFL? Yes. Have there been times where he's taken a sack where he shouldn't have? Yes, those can both be true. But the thing that you have to realize is that this offensive line is in shambles right now. David Andrews was out for a couple weeks, came back, got hurt again. Thigh contusion. Came back to practice today on Tuesday. So that guy's a warrior. I love David Andrews. I would go to battle for David Andrews every day and twice on Sunday. Plain and simple. But he could be out. Isaiah Wynn's out with a foot injury. Now, I have crucified Isaiah Wynn, and he has rightfully deserved to be crucified on this program and on all Boston sports media channels. You think about this, right? David Wynn's out. Or David Wynn. David Andrews is out. Isaiah Wynn is out. Now you have James Ferentz in there. Yadni Kajust at right tackle, who, by the way, didn't look great on Sunday. Had two or three sacks that were partly his responsibility on Mac Jones. Trent Brown hasn't given you much this year because he's been injured. He's been inconsistent. And Trent Brown's supposed to be a really good piece on that line. The only really consistent piece has been Mike Nwenu. He has been fantastic since he's gotten here. So when you have a broken up line, how do you expect Mac Jones to succeed? And how do you expect this offense to succeed? That's one part of it. And then the other part is Matt Patricia. I'm sorry. He's not an offensive coordinator. It's just plain and simple. Now, does he have some good play calls? Sure. Every offensive coordinator does. Has some plays that work. Play action worked a couple times on Sunday. I remember there was one sequence where play action to Hunter Henry. Play action, I think it was to, I forget the receiver offhand. It wasn't Aguilar. I forget the receiver who it was. It might have been Jacoby Myers. Actually, I don't even know. But it was back-to-back, and it was chunk plays. And then the Patriots got into Jets territory. Play action works. Stop trying to run the ball every single play that you can. You have to have balance. And guess what? If you're predictable, which 10 times a game, you can predict when the Patriots are going to run the ball or when they're going to throw the ball. You can't be that predictable. You can't. Cannot. Why not try to throw more a little bit on first down? Throw some screens. Throw some quick slants like you did. It was actually the Patriots field goal, right? Patriots had a third and long, 9-yard pass to Devontae Parker on a quick slant. Got them back into decent field goal range. And then they have a chance to make a field goal. But again, this Patriots team, defensively, scary good. Matthew Judon, defensive player of the year. Should at least be in consideration. By the way, Judon had another sack and a half in that game. So he's up to, I think, 13 on the year, if I'm not mistaken, or very close. Excuse me. The run game, you got a boost from Damian Harris. 8 carries, 65 yards. 8.1 yards per carry. Ramondre Stevenson didn't run the ball well. 15 rushes, 26 yards. Only 1.7 yards per carry. You want to win in this league, and you want to win with a power running attack, you got to get more out of Stevenson in that game. Plain and simple. The Jets probably should have punted the ball out of bounds. Robert Saleh, for the most part, had a good game plan. The Jets defense was hungry. They were aggressive. But, man, you gotta figure out that quarterback situation in Zach Wilson because he can't do it. I don't think he's not ready to take on being an NFL starting quarterback. And for those that are like, well, Mac Jones isn't that much better, I want you to rethink that because Mac Jones at least is smart enough where when he has time, he can pick apart an NFL defense. We saw it in the first year. We saw glimpses of it on Sunday. When he had time to throw, he found open receivers. He said he did a self-audit on the bye week. That was probably one of the things, his timing on his hitches, timing on his routes with his receivers. You know, not double-clicking and then all of a sudden the receiver's not even in the route yet. Mac Jones is going to be fine. I'm not saying he's going to be like a Patrick Mahomes or a Josh Allen, but he can be serviceable as an NFL quarterback, and I think he can be a good NFL quarterback. So that's something to think about. Patriots are 6-4. They're currently in the sixth seed in the AFC. They have a Thanksgiving night matchup with the Minnesota Vikings, who just got their doors blown off by the Dallas Cowboys, by the way. Let's keep that in mind for a second. Minnesota offensively has a lot of great pieces. Dalvin Cook, Justin Jefferson, TJ Hawkinson, Adam Thielen. There are a lot of good players on that Vikings team. But I'm going to tell you something. It all goes back to Kirk Cousins. It does. It goes back. It starts and ends with Kirk Cousins. Because guess what? Kirk Cousins in primetime, not great. Not great at all. But he has a ton of weapons. He does. And guess what? On the defensive side of the ball, They got some weapons there too. Harrison Smith, very, very good player. Excuse me. Danielle Hunter, another great, great player. So guess what? The Vikings can score. They have options. You know, if it's not Jefferson, Dalvin Cook can run the ball down your throat. The Patriots should almost treat this, and I'm going to be careful with how I say this. They should almost treat this like the Cleveland Browns game, where you know they have a good running attack. You know they have a good receiver, right? You think about this. Dalvin Cook is like how Nick Chubb was. That's the guy you got to stop in Cleveland, and you stopped him. That's the guy you got to stop in Minnesota. Justin Jefferson, I think a lot better than Amari Cooper, but still a number one receiver, a true number one receiver that you have to shut down. If you can shut down those two pieces, then you better be comfortable with Adam Thielen and TJ Hawkinson getting a lot more touches. And you better bring pressure to Kirk Cousins, because Kirk Cousins, he's not really a mobile quarterback, but he's not the type of quarterback that will just stand in the pocket almost like a Peyton Manning or something like that. But if you get to Kirk Cousins, you're going to get to him. You have to treat it like the Cleveland game. Because again, decent defense as well. And it's a short week. We saw the report today that Bill Belichick had been preparing for the Vikings during the bye week. Now, for the trolls out there, and I want to be careful with how I say this, but for a guy like Adam Jones on 98.5 The Sports Hub, who's always like, oh, well, that means that they overlooked the Jets. No, they didn't. They knew that it was going to be a short week. They knew they only had 3 days after that Jets game. So if you have a bye week, why wouldn't you take that time to go ahead and study two opponents if you can? Why wouldn't you? You didn't overlook the Jets. You're being smart, and you're doing what you need to do to try to give yourself an advantage to win this football game. And I was listening on the way home to Mike Felger and Tony Maserati, and they actually brought up a good point. Minnesota had their bye in week 7. Patriots just had their bye. Now, I know that there's some pieces that are, you know, like a David Andrews and Isaiah Wynn, like I mentioned before, that are potentially going to be out. But Minnesota is banged up too. They're not going to have their best offensive tackle in Christian Darrisaw. He's out. That's a big advantage for the Patriots, especially if they want to attack that Minnesota offensive line. I think, honestly, if you can contain Kirk Cousins and you can get him to make boneheaded mistakes, it's crazy to think about, but I think the Patriots can win this game. I do. With the way that defense is playing, especially getting pressure on the quarterback, if they are for real, they will show up on Thursday night. Now, as far as a score prediction goes, I'm almost tempted to not give one because this is too tough of a game. I'm going to be safe here, and I'm going to say that the Vikings beat the Patriots. I'm going to say it's going to be like a 24-13 type of game. But don't be surprised if the Patriots pulled off the upset. Do not be surprised. Because if you're a Patriots fan, you're thinking to yourself, yeah, you're 6-4 right now. Your next two games are at Minnesota and then home on Thursday night against Buffalo. So you got to split those. Be 7-5 after 13 weeks. And then your last five games of the season, you got to play Buffalo again. And in no particular order, you got to play Buffalo. You got to play Miami. You got to play Cincinnati. You're at the Raiders. And you're at the Cardinals. And that Bills game, the end of the season, is in Buffalo. Right now, if you ask me, I think you beat the Cardinals because they're a mess. And although Kyler Murray is a scrambling quarterback, I think that there's so many distractions going on in Arizona that they're not going to pull that off. I think they could beat the Raiders because the Raiders have a trash defense, even though they can put up a lot of points. And Miami and Cincinnati and Buffalo, those are tough games. So you really have to make sure that you take care of business if you can against the Vikings. It's crucial. You need to make sure that you do what you need to do against the Vikings. Stop the running game with Dalvin Cook. Make Kirk Cousins throw the ball. And if Kirk Cousins beats you, then good for him. If he doesn't, then you did what you were supposed to do. Then you go into the Buffalo game 7-4. With a lot of confidence. So that's my Patriots take. Hopefully the Patriots can come away with a Thanksgiving night victory. We'll see what happens, but I'm not going to hold my tongue for that game. I won't be surprised either way at the result. I wouldn't be surprised if the Vikings obliterated the Patriots, because I've been saying that. But it also wouldn't surprise me if the Patriots somehow pulled this game out. It just wouldn't at this point. And that's where I'm going to leave the Patriots. Let's move on. Let's talk Celtics for a second. And this is going to be quick. So the Celtics, 13-4 on the season, if I'm not mistaken. They just played the Chicago Bulls last night. As we're recording this on Tuesday, November 22nd. They played Monday, November 21st. Ended up losing 121-107. Look, I really don't want to hear the people that are going to say the sky is falling, because the sky is not falling. Guess what? Every NBA team is going to have an off night. Celtics had an off shooting night last night. I watched a lot of the game. They were off. Al Horford was like 0 for 8 at one point. That's not like Al Horford. That's a really bad game for Al Horford. It's literally as bad as you can get. And you think about Chicago, they have a lot of good players. They really do. DeMar DeRozan, an all-star. He had what? 28 points. Vucevic had a double-double, 12 and 13 rebounds. Zach LaVine had 22 points. The Bulls are a good team. Their record doesn't indicate it right now because they're 7-10, but they have pieces. And it wouldn't surprise me if they snuck in as like a 7 seed in the playoffs when the season ends. I think Chicago can be good. They just got to put it together, plain and simple. The Celtics team, one thing you can question, are the starters playing too much? Take a look at the minutes. Jason Tatum, 36 minutes. Al Horford, 35 minutes. Jaylen Brown, 38 minutes. Marcus Smart, 35. Grant Williams, 35. Trying to see who else here. Derek White, 18. Malcolm Brogdon, 25. The starters are playing a lot. And as they should. They're the starters, right? They should play a lot. But is it getting to a point where we should be concerned? I don't think so. Celtics just had a long playoff run last year. They played until June, like mid-June. They had time to rest. And they're coming out of the gates firing. And they have a tough schedule coming up. They're home against Dallas and Luka Doncic, who seems to have pulled some magic out of his hat every time he plays the Celtics. It always was like a buzzer beater. That's ridiculous. I'm expecting that again. And then you have the Sacramento Kings, who have the second best offense in the NBA. They got some players there. But I think the Celtics can take care of business both those games, truthfully. And then they have a little back-to-back on Sunday and Monday, home against the Wizards and then home against the Hornets. That should be two easy wins. The Celtics don't go 3-1 in this span, then we can talk about the skyfall. They go 2-2 or worse, then we can say, okay, something's going on here. Joe Mazzulla has done a great job with that offense, opening up the offense. They're scoring at historic rates right now. Will the defense come together? I think it will. I really believe that this defense will pull it together. And then when Robert Williams comes back, because he looks like he's ahead of schedule right now, that defense is going to get even better. As long as he stays healthy. That's the key. As long as he stays healthy. So hope and pray that the Celtics will get back on track, which I think they're going to. Go 3-1 in this stretch, and then after 21 games, they'll be 16-5. I'm happy with that. I'm good with that. All right. Bruins, real quick. You got to buy in on this team. I say it every week, and I'm going to say it again. You got to buy in. This Bruins team is special. And guess what? They realize that this is the last hurrah for Patrice Bergeron, who, by the way, scored his 1,000th NHL point the other night on an assist to Brad Marchand in a 5-3 win over the Tampa Bay Lightning. That is amazing to think about. Patrice Bergeron's been here forever. And he got his 1,000th career point. Did you see the celebration? Everybody coming out onto the ice and celebrating with Bergeron? That shows just how valuable he is to this organization. I mean, think about just everything he's gone through. Winning a Stanley Cup. You know, going through it and going to two more Stanley Cups and losing in heartbreaking fashion. The ups and downs that come with being on this Bruins team. Look at this year. Perfect example, right? They go in, they start beating everybody. They sign a controversial player in Mitchell Miller, handles it with class, and then a good thing happens for it. That's not surprising at all to me. Patrice Bergeron embodies what it means to be a Boston Bruin. Tough, hard-nosed, smart, knows what to do with the puck, knows where to be on the ice, Very, very smart guy. And this Bruins team can score at will on you. They have so many options. Look at their first line. Marchand, Bergeron, and then, you know, pick your third guy. David Pastrnak, Jake DeBrusk, whoever it is, can be on that first line. Then your second line with Krejci and Taylor Hall, and then Pastrnak if he's on that line. Charlie Coyle on the third line. This Bruins team is deep, and there's a rumor that they want to go get Patrick Kane. The proposed trade that I saw of Brandon Carlo and Jake DeBrusk, I wouldn't do because DeBrusk is just getting into his prime, and now he's not going to want to go anywhere. Last year, he had a trade request. He's not doing that anymore. Now he's realizing with a new coach and Jim Montgomery here and Bruce Cassidy out, something's clicked with this team. And guess what? They have a chance to really prove that they're legit. So they just beat the Lightning, right? They play the Florida Panthers on Wednesday night, Thanksgiving Eve. And they play on Friday against the Hurricanes. They have the Lightning again, home against the Avalanche, home against the Golden Knights at Colorado. So you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You have 6 games in that span. If you can go 4-2 or better, then that'll really say something because these are some of the best teams in the league, right? The Lightning have won a couple Stanley Cups. The Avalanche won the Stanley Cup last year. The Golden Knights have the best record right now in the Western Conference. The Hurricanes are there. They knocked you out last year. The Panthers are really good now. So this is a good opportunity for you to see how good your team really is. You know, are Linus Allmark and Jeremy Swayman the answer? And so far, I'd have to say yes. But back to that goal scoring. I mean, let's take a look here. 5 goals, 6 goals, 4 goals, 5 goals, 3 goals, 3 goals, 3 goals. 1 goal against the Maple Leafs. 5 goals, 6 goals. The Bruins can score. And we're not used to that. We're not used to seeing this type of team. But Bruce Cassidy, I feel like it was a lot more defensive-minded team. This year with Montgomery, he's opened up the chance for this Bruins team to really cash in offensively. And it's a lot of fun to watch. And I'm not a hockey guy, and I'm saying that this is fun to watch. So think about that for a second. If a casual hockey fan is saying this is fun to watch, you should really be cashing in now if you're not watching already. So again, buy in on this Bruins team. 17-2. Through the first quarter of the season, they are the best team in the NHL. And there's something special going on right now until we see otherwise. Buy in on the Bruins. All right. Last thoughts, Red Sox. Before we do that, got to give a shout out to our friends at A&B Kitchen Bar. Sorry for the sigh. It's been a long school day, so bear with me. Shout out to our friends at A&B Kitchen Bar, both in Beverly and Boston. Whether you are looking for a chance to go out with family, you want to catch the game, but you don't have a ticket, or you just want a nice meal out with your friends, maybe take out the significant other, A&B Kitchen Bar is the place to be. Plenty of TVs to make it sound like you're at the Bruins game. Local meals such as fish and chips, chicken pot pie, great meals, locally crafted beers, everywhere else in between. Make sure that you check out A&B Kitchen and Bar in one location in Boston, Mass., the other one in Beverly, Mass. Tell them that the Legends Boys sent you. Excuse me. All right, last topic of the night, Red Sox. Now, a lot of stuff has happened, right? Nathan Eovaldi didn't accept his qualifying offer. There's other guys that are out there. We know that Bogaerts is still a free agent. Rafi Devers is still a free – Devers isn't a free agent, but he has 1 year left in his contract. That's a guy that's been talked about potentially leaving after the 2023 season. The weird thing to me is this. So I'm going to read this from this – I want to give this Twitter account credit. Boston Sports Gordo at BOS Sports Gordo. And I want you to think about something. Gordo got this from Marino Pepin, who covers the Red Sox. And on his Instagram, he says that the Red Sox and Rafael Devers are getting closer to an agreement and are about $50 million apart. Conversations are still flowing. So my thing is this, and apparently there's another report real quick while I see it. John Heyman says the Red Sox have offered Devers about $220 million or so. So a couple things with this. First of all, if you're willing to go to 220, why don't you just bump it up more? Get this deal done. Get your cornerstone third baseman locked in for the future. That's number one. Number two, why are you not treating Xander Bogaerts like this? That's the part that really aggravates me. Because Xander Bogaerts is a guy that should also be here for the long term. We've talked about it so many times on this show. Bogaerts, Devers, Casas, Story. That should be your infield for the next 5 to 7 years. Then you can make your way to the outfield. And then you can actually get pitching. Because there's also reports that the Red Sox aren't going to go after these big name guys. Rodon, Scherzer, DeGrom, whatever. Jake DeGrom has gotten his medical records requested by the Yankees. You know the Yankees are serious about winning. Excuse me. So the thing is, right? Why are you not doing what you need to do with Xander Bogaerts? It is infuriating. You are allowing him to walk. I still don't think he's coming back. I could be proven wrong. Even some of the MLB analysts think that he's going to go back to Boston. I don't see how. Unless you're willing to pony up the dough, he's not coming back, and I'm going to tell you why. This is a theory that I have. The 2021 draft, the MLB draft, I think changed things a little bit. It really did. Notice something, right? Red Sox had the 4th overall pick of that draft because 2020 was so bad. Think about it. If Jack Leiter was still on the board at that time, at the 4 spot, because he was taken by the Texas Rangers number 2, which I was shocked about. I actually was in tears about that. Not literal tears, but my eyes were watering because I was so upset. They're actually watering now thinking about it. Because Jack Leiter could have been a cornerstone piece of the future in your rotation. But instead, you take Marcelo Mayer, however you say it. You took Mayer, and he's a shortstop. He was ranked the number one prospect in the whole nation at that time. Excuse me. So when you took Mayer, the Red Sox probably thought, we can get by once Bogaerts is up. We can either put Story at shortstop, Christian Arroyo at shortstop, or we can go out and get a bridge shortstop until Mayer's ready. We don't need Bogaerts. That's something that has to be in play, right? Now, Mayer may not be ready till like 2026. At that point, he would be about 22, 23 years old because he's a young kid, keep in mind. But I truly think that if the Red Sox had gotten Leiter instead of Mayer, I think that that would have changed some things, and I think that would have given the Red Sox a little more urgency to keep Bogaerts here. I really do. They also drafted a bunch of shortstops and middle infielders in the 2022 draft, which I thought was interesting. So you put those together. I think that's part of the reason why Bogaerts isn't re-signed now. Now, if he goes out and re-signs with the Red Sox, then that clears my whole theory and throws it right out the window. You can use it as toilet paper at that point. But right now, Philadelphia Phillies need a shortstop. They just signed Dave Dombrowski to an extension through 2027. They're committed to winning. They just made it to the World Series. Again, they need a shortstop. You don't think that Dave Dombrowski is looking down in Boston being like, wow, they're screwing this up. And he's you know, plotting, he's rubbing his hands together, just thinking to himself, oh, I can't wait for this. I'm going to make my move. I'm going to get him here. Or he might just go out and get Trey Turner. Who knows what's going to happen with those. Phillies have been linked to both. A couple other teams that analysts think that Bogaerts could go. The Cubs are another team. They're looking for a shortstop. The LA Angels, they've shown that they are willing to spend the money and they've shown that they're willing to make deals. They're being aggressive. If they don't work out, but I give them credit, at least they try. So if you're really comfortable with losing Bogaerts to one of those teams, good luck to you. You better sign Devers long-term. Now, I'm glad they're taking care of Devers, but I'm a little surprised that they're taking care of Devers before taking care of Bogaerts. That's where I'm just like, I don't get it. So again,
sign Xander Bogaerts, get the extension with Devers done, and then go fix your bullpen and go fix your rotation. There's a lot of holes there. Because if you go into next season, especially in that starting rotation with Chris Sale, who is injured goods right now. I love Chris Sale, but he gets injured too much. Brian Bayo, who's going to be in his first full year as a Red Sox. Nick Pivetta, who's up and down. Michael Walker, who you don't know if he's coming back. James Paxton, who didn't pitch at all in 2022. Your rotation has holes in it. It has questions that need to be addressed. And your bullpen needs to be addressed. So you need to fix those things. Free agency is the way to do it. Trades are the way to do it. Get on the phone, Heim, because if not, you're not going to have a job after the 2023 season. That's enough Red Sox. That's where we're going to leave it. So again, just to recap, Patriots, big win over the Jets, big tilt against the Vikings on Thanksgiving. Celtics look like they're going to get back on track after a loss to the Bulls. Bruins are 17-2 at the time of this recording and are unbelievable. The Red Sox need to get it done with Bogaerts and Devers. Get those deals done, please. Please. As always, remember, rate, subscribe to the Legends Lingo podcast on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, Anchor, everywhere where you can get your podcasts. Check us out at studentunionsports.com. We're almost closing in on 200 episodes. We're two episodes away. We already have one confirmed guest that's going to be joining us for episode 200. We're going to try to get a bunch of people on, and it's going to be a hangout, and we're going to have fun. Reflect back on 200 episodes, or reflect back on all the memories in Boston sports that have happened since we started this podcast, including a Super Bowl victory for the Patriots, their last one. And, you know, we're going to get some friends back on, and we're going to hopefully get some new guests, and we're just going to have fun. It's going to be a party. So be on the lookout for that. Episode 200 coming in a couple weeks. I'm your host, Alan Hegan. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you next week for episode 199. Yes, sir.